Okay, we continue with our next installment regarding the war, the battle with David and Goliath. We're in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, and we're going to be starting Pasuk Yud Zayin shortly. We're up to the point in the story where Goliath had challenged the best soldier of the Jewish people to a one-on-one duel, to which the Jews were too afraid to do. And therefore he starts cursing out the Jewish people, insulting them. People are terrified from him. And then we're introduced how David is brought into the story, how the father tells him to come to be with the brothers, to bring them food and things like that. And since he was the youngest, he was not sent to battle. Oh, that's where up to, not up to the food yet. And he'd go back and forth, though. And then finally, we said that Goliath, every day, once in the morning, once in the night, came out to scare the Jewish people for some total of 40 days. And he did that so the Jews would not be able to say the Kriya Shema, wouldn't be able to be focused on their goal. And if you think about it, the word Goliath, what similar word is there to the word Goliath? It's a number of words, but one is Golus, exile. And he intended to drive the Jewish people into Golus. So, and he tries to drive a wedge, not just between the Jews and Shaul, their leader. He's also trying to drive a wedge between the Jews and Hashem, to drive them into Golus. The best way to drive them into Golus is to get them not to say the Kriya Shema. So he's trying which way he can. There's other things about Goliath, which we'll talk about later. But that's what he's all about. It's so funny how his aunt Ruth was the one to want to come close to Hashem, and he's the one trying to take people away from Hashem. And then we are told that the 40 days also symbolize a number of other things. That symbolizes the 40 days required to receive the Torah, right? And that is what gives the Jewish people their whole raison d'etre. So he felt, you know, it took 40 days for the Jews to get the Torah, 40 days for Moshe to get the Torah. He figures I have 40 days to stand up against this Torah. And also, the Medrash brings on, he said, you know, don't you say it takes 40 days to bring the embryo to develop to be something? So I'm waiting 40 days for you guys to develop into something. What's the matter with you guys? So everything that was 40, now 40 also causes a transition for something to come into a new reality. So what really is happening is a new reality is developing, but Goliath isn't aware that's the reality to destroy him. So now we move on to Pasuk Yud Zayin. We'll do the next three Pesukim. Yud Zayin, Yud Ches, and Yud Tes. Vayomer Yishai L'David. Yishai tells David as the battle, the war conditions are drawing on, he says to David Beno, he says to David his son, Kach no l'achecho eifas hakoli hazeh. Take for your brother this, an ephah, it's a measurement, of toasted grain. Vasor lechem azeh, and 10 breads, this 10 breads. Vaharetz hamachan lechecha, and run to your brothers in the camp. Pasuk Yudches. Now, since they were, it was already 40 days, probably whatever food his brothers brought was running out, so you have to bring them something to eat. Ve'isaseres charitzei hacholav ha'eli tovi l'sar elef. And these 10 cheeses, bring them to the officer in charge of 1,000, maybe their battalion leader. Ve'sachecha tifkod l'shalom. And find out how's the peace of your brothers, how they're doing. Ve'sarubosam tikoch. And take their collateral, which we'll explain in a minute. What's that talking about? One more pasuk. V'shol v'heima v'chol ish yisrael b'heima ke'ela. And shol and they, meaning the brothers, and all the Jewish people, We're in the valley of Elah. Milchamim and Plishtim, fighting with the Plishtim. So what's this idea with the collateral over here? What kind of collateral are they? So the Malbim says, one second, that they have to pay back their debts. Well, for soldiers on the battlefield for a while, they don't have any food. So what do? They have to borrow to get some food. If you borrow food, you have to give some collateral to make sure you're getting, you can get your stuff back. I guess it comes to the point with brothers, you know, are borrowing a lot. So he's saying that you come with money to be able to pay off the debt and be able to get their collateral. You're paying off the collateral, they're getting their collaterals back, and therefore you bring money for that. So that's one interpretation.
No,
I guess there's always people who know how to make a buck. You know, there's guys there, oh, you don't have, I brought more.
High
commerce. You know, yeah, well.
The opportunists.
There's got to be somebody, there's always an opportunist. Somebody's got stuff. Could be even, who knows, maybe even the king brings a lot of extra food, but people have to pay him back. I don't know, but it seems that they have to be eating from somewhere. Maybe there's stores, you know, maybe Arab dealers, you know, whatever, people coming by saying, you know, they had to eat, so it's from somewhere. Another interpretation of the rabbis is that they would give themselves a get krisus, give them a divorce. You know, when Jewish soldiers went out to battle, you had to, in case you would be lost in battle, MIA, and you wouldn't be found, the wife would never be able to remarry. So they would give conditional divorces, a conditional divorce. That if I die, so you don't need a divorce at all. If I come back, we don't need a divorce at all. But if you don't know what happens to me, then I want this divorce to be effective as of today as I go out to battle. So it could be in the hustle and bustle to get themselves to go out to battle, they forgot to give that divorce. So he gave the divorces so that they would be able to not have any problems in case, I'm not sure exactly, so it's a collateral insofar as that they won't always have a debt, as it were. It's a debt of marriage almost, and you can't get out of that debt. So go give them the collateral so they should be able to remarry. Others explain, and Targum Yonah was saying, just to know how they're doing as well. See how they're doing and give back information back to the father, which seems to be similar to what I said before. Anyway, fine. That is the simple interpretations. Reb Tzadok gives us, not Reb Tzadok, I'm sorry, the Yalkut Shimoni is a much deeper interpretation of what's going on over here, and it has really a historical relevance. So I'm going to read for you the Medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni. Yalkut Shimoni says, Lamud oso shevet lios arav elulelu. This tribe knows how to be a guarantor. Orev is collateral, is also a guarantor. This tribe knows how to be a guarantor, this one for the other. What's going on? When was the first time in the Torah the word guarantor was used?
What's the
Hebrew word? Well, not the same
Yemen.
Word.
Yemen, to take Yemen.
Very good. Very good. When Yosef wanted Binyamin brought down, and the brothers Yaakov refused to bring him down, so Yehuda says, "I guarantee he'll come back." Anochi a'ervenu from Areva, Arbosam. So I guarantee. So there's already a tradition that Yehuda is a guarantor for Binyamin. He guaranteed to bring him back home alive. So, Omar Yishai le David beno. Yishai says to David his son, Now, of course, Yishai didn't say it. Yishai probably wasn't cognizant of this. But Hashem is making events transpire in a way that makes it happen. Okay, be aware. So Yishai, as if he said to David, the time has come for you to fulfill this guarantee. Shall Yehuda Zekenecha, your great grandfather Yehuda, Sha'arav es Binyamin, guaranteed Binyamin miyad avi from his father, Shenemar Anochi Aravenu. So I would guarantee it. Leich go v'hotzeh oso min arvoso. Take him out of his position of debt. Ma'asa David, what did David do? Holach v'kiyam es harevis v'horeg es Goliath. He fulfilled this payment of debt and he killed Goliath. Omer l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, says Hashem, chayecha, by your life, kishem shenasata nafshcha tacha shol shumishifto shol binyamin, just like you were willing to give your life over for Shaul, who comes from the tribe of Binyamin, kishem sheYehuda, sheAsa Yehuda zekeinecha, just like your grandfather did, great grandfather Yehuda did. Shenemar, it says, Yeshiv na'avlecha tachasanar, when he spoke to Yosef, let me be in the place of the young lad. Kach, right? It's really so. This history is playing itself out here, repeating itself. Yehuda went to what he thought was Safnas Paneach, the Egyptian king, who was extremely immoral man. I mean, that's what he thought, because Egypt is an immoral place. And he says, instead of taking Binyamin one-on-one, let me replace him, and I'll be the one-on-one. So just like you, David, did the same thing, because Shaul is from which tribe? King Shaul is from which tribe? Binyamin. King Saul's from Binyamin. And Binyamin's in trouble now. And this terrible guy, Goliath, he wants to take him one-on-one. And Saul is frozen. There's nothing that he can do. So just like your grandfather, your great descendant, ancestor, was the one who was able to guarantee Binyamin, said, now you have done the same thing and you have safeguarded someone from the tribe of Binyamin. So what's going to be your reward? So the Medrash continues. Amar la Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm sorry. Kach ani noyseid beis hamikdash b'chelik Yudah ben Yamin. So I will put it, the beis hamikdash will lie in which territory, which tribes? In Yehuda and in ben Yamin. The beis hamikdash itself, part of it was in Yehuda and part of it was in ben Yamin. V'lo'od, and something even more. V'lo'od, such small print over here. Ella Shekol, Hash, what?
How could part of it be? Did he mean part of it, or did he mean
part of the
one in one territory and the second one in another territory?
No, the base of Migdash, let's say this is the base of Migdash. Let's say this is the tribe of Binyamin, this is the tribe of Yehuda, yeah?
Right over the
coast. So here's the base of Migdash. It really was a sliver, but I'm just saying, the Beis Hamikdash took up some space. It was exactly the border of Binyamin Yehuda. As a matter of fact, the Binyamin border was designed in a way to just sliver out. It really didn't belong there. Shem Bedavka made it, so it should be there. So they're sharing the same territory of the Beis Hamikdash, not finished. Flaod and more. Else, what other distinction does Yehuda and Binyamin have? All the tribes went into exile in the first exile, right? About 100 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the 10 tribes who split off from Shevi Yehuda, right? And who was the one that stuck with Yehuda the whole time? Binyamin. So when Sancheiriv exiled the 10 tribes who were lost, so when they will be lost, they'll be going with Shevi Yehuda. Binyamin ain't going anymore. But the tribes Yudin and Binyamin didn't go into that exile where they got lost on the other side of the Sambat Yom. But you never went into that kind of an exile. You went to another exile, but it was one that you came back from. So you will not go with them. Lama, why? Why didn't Sancheiriv take them all? He was able to. You know, the Gemara says that Sancheiriv after exiling the 10 tribes, he went right to Yerushalayim. He had it surrounded. It'd be a piece of cake to destroy them. And King Chizkiyahu gave up. There's nothing he could do. He just davened to Hashem and went to sleep, and the next, that night, Hashem destroyed Sancheiriv totally. Totally. So really, Ben Yom Yehuda were supposed to go into exile, no question about it. It was a much worse exile. It's an exile that the other 10 tribes never came back. So at least when they went into an exile, they all came back. So why? Lama. Shishnei Shvatim Elu Heminu Bi. Because these two tribes believed in me. V'kitshu Shmi Bayom. And they sanctified my name at the Sea of Reeds. When the Jews were stuck at the Sea of Reeds, who were the ones who jumped in? Shenamar, it says, Shom Binyamin Tzair Rodeim Sore Yehuda Ragmasam. That there, the young Binyamin went down, and he got hit by rocks by Yehuda, because Yehuda wanted to go down. In other words, those are the two tribes who fought to go in first. So they both went in to sanctify God's name to cross the Sea of Reeds, while the others were waiting. So you see that there is an intimate connection between Binyamin and Yehuda, one that they always would, one especially Yehuda would take care of Binyamin, and because of that, they never were totally wiped out. There was this connection that the two tribes had with each other. Why you don't find it with others? Why you don't find it with Yisachar and Zvon? It's a question. But clearly, these two are really the embodiment of leadership in a great way, and they never went out. And this was historically so. And Reb Tzadok talks about this, and as well, we're going to see from the Meshilach, he talks about this, and you get some very interesting ideas, the entire relationship over here. So we know, again, it's always, Binyamin, when we talk about Binyamin, it's always a code word for Yosef, but in a less powerful way, because he's the second child of Rachel, so it's really Rachel's powers, and Yaakov's together. Yosef embodies it in the greatest way. When Yosef doesn't embody it, then Binyamin does in a lesser way. And that's what Reb Tzadok says. I'll just read for you a few lines from his Sefer Machshavas Charutz, where he says, for example, we know that he says the Beis HaMikdash, the holiest of holies, was in the portion of Yehud and Binyamin. And that Kedusha that was there existed forever. That was a Kedusha for all time. The Kedusha that's by the Beis HaMikdash is a Kedusha that's a permanent. Even if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it never gets wiped out. And we know that the Shekhinah never left the Kosel HaMaravi, etc., etc. On the other hand, the Mishkan, which was in Shiloh, which was in the tribe of Yosef's portion, as it were, Ephraim and Manasseh, right, was only temporary. It was only a temporary Mishkan. That place where God resided was only temporary. And it gives examples of that. And other kingdoms that came out of Yosef were temporary. Yeravam, Achav, that all came from the tribe of Manasseh. They came from Yosef. It's all temporary. In other words, Yosef had, there were the two firstborns. One from Rachel, one from Leah. It's always that shifting of power. Who would be the leader? There are times where the descendants of Yosef were the leaders. It was always temporary. Yosef never is a permanent leader. So the Reb Tzadok says, he called Tokef Madreka, so because the whole power of Yosef's level, is only regarding this world. The Tzorach Lehagdoros, that needs barriers, resistance. And this whole world, this world is only temporary. This world is temporary. The challenges are temporary. And you need someone very strong on a temporary basis. That's Yosef. He's the temporary one. We'll explain. But the permanent kingdom, that's part of the kingdom of heaven that Hashem gave to His beloved through the root of the Jewish people, who rock Yehuda, which is only Yehuda. Yehuda is the one, is the eternal one, the eternal kingship. And that's David. David, it comes from Yehuda. David is the embodiment of the seventh meat of Malchus, which is eternal Malchus. And then he says, and Binyamin always accompanies him. Because also, the level of Binyamin is also Binyamin HaTzadik. You have Yosef HaTzadik, Binyamin HaTzadik. One of four people never sinned in their lives. And one of them was Binyamin. Who mili makom darget HaTzadik sheneva, kishenevad Yosef. So he is the one who fulfills the place of Yosef when Yosef's descendants aren't around. Hanu darga to call Mas L'Shishamayim. That's a level everything is L'Shem Shamayim. In other words, he's telling you that Yosef, his great strength is restraint. He's always wanting to hold back. That's tzaddik. Tzaddik yisod olam. He's able to restrain himself. He's able to deal with the secular world and still flourish as a religious Jew. And you need Yosef to be around to have restraint during all the tests in life. And but eternal kingship is from Hashem, which Hashem gives from heaven, which he gave to Yehuda. And why is that? Why does Yehuda get it and Yosef doesn't? The difference between Yehuda and Yosef is that as much as Yosef is able to resist temptation, but Yehuda is the more ideal level, because Yehuda is constantly cognizant of Hashem under all circumstances. Yehuda has the same letters as Hashem's name, Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, with an extra Dalet. But it's really, Hey embodies Hashem's name. Yehuda comes from the word Modeh, to give thanks to Hashem, and to admit to Hashem. And Yehuda is the essence of what a Jew is all about, being able to, Yehudi also means to deny idol worship, to give thanks to Hashem under all circumstances. And that is the greatness of Yehuda, who's able to find Hashem in every situation he finds himself in life. That's what Yehuda is able to do. While Yosef, we'll see in a minute, is not that. So that's what the Reb Tzadok says. And you look in the Mei Shiloach in Parshas Tetzaveh, when they talk about the different stones that was on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. So he discusses the stone of Yehuda was called the Nofech stone. I don't know what kind of stone this is. Even if you look at the Yard Scroll, they'll translate it as Nofech. It's a type of a gem, but the Ishbitzer Rebbe explains it's a kind of a gem that reflects any color that shines on it. It has many hues. It's multicolored, however it is. Maybe it's more of a glass kind of, a mirror kind, whatever, but it's able to reflect all the colors. Why? Because that's Yehuda's Midah. He reflected all the Midos. Because that's what Malchus is. What is Malchus? Malchus is the seventh. Tonight we'll be doing Malchus Shebetiferes. Right? The attribute of Malchus is it takes all the other attributes and makes them happen. Malchus has no Mida of its own. The seventh level of Malchus, it's not a character. Chesed, you have chesed, is kindness. That's a Mida. It's a Mida to want to expand and give. That's a Mida. That's a feeling. Gvura, control. That's a feeling. We're in Tiferes. Mercy. That's a feeling. These are feelings. Consistency is a feeling. Humility is a feeling. Malchus isn't a feeling. There's no feeling. I see there's these other qualities. It's the ability to make the other qualities happen. The enabler. It's the enabler. The enabler has no quality of its own. That's Malchus, king, a kingdom, leisle migar mei klum. A king has nothing of his own. King owns nothing. Malchus is like the moon. The moon only reflects. But it has a tremendous ability to reflect. So therefore, he didn't really have any color, but whatever needed to be reflected, which is, you know, reminiscent of the story I said a few times already of a chassid of Rav Moshe Kabriner, where the Kutzker Rebbe, whenever a chassid would come to him, he would ask the chassid, tell me, what does your Rebbe do best? Everybody has their thing, you know? They're good in everything, but it's something they're best in. So he asked the chassid of Rav Moshe Kabriner, what is it that your Rebbe does best? He says, whatever has to be done at that moment in time, that's what my Rebbe does best. That's what he does best. Whatever has to happen right now, that's what he does best. So Yehuda was like that. He reflected all the midos while Yosef just had one. Okay? So Yehuda can shine as a tzaddik, and when he falls and when he sins, and needs to be a Baal Tshuva, he shines as a Baal Tshuva. Whatever situation he finds himself in, he's able to handle it. Because he always is reflecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when he's down and out. And that's what a king has to do. He has to be able to take all those different forces within the Jewish people, and according to their level, and according to their situations, and bring them L'Shem Shemayim. Very flexible. It'll be very flexible to be a king. It's too many different personalities you have to deal with. Yosef, on the other hand, he was really basically resisting evil. So he was, you know, real law and order man. So real rigid. Yosef, he had his midah and couldn't change from that midah. To be the king, you have to be very flexible. But Yosef still has a very important part, because there's certain times where you're not supposed to be flexible. You need incredible leadership of not being flexible. And that's when you're in Golos, when you're amongst the goyim. That's when you need that more than anything else. There's nothing really to develop within the Jews except restraint. So that's when Yosef is the one in charge. Binyamin is that part of the family with Yosef who reflects that. But Binyamin is always with Yehuda. Binyamin is always around even when Yosef isn't. But can also do things l'shem shemayim. The problem is Binyamin has a lot of Yosef's aspects, but the problem is, and when Binyamin's not with Yehuda, when he's not with Yehuda, he gets into all kinds of trouble, as we found in the story of Pelegesh Begiva. He gets all trouble. He doesn't have as much restraint as Yosef, but when he's with Yehuda, Yehuda can strengthen him. So the power of Binyamin is at a time of great darkness to be able to overcome that, to perceive the desires of Hashem when others cannot. Yosef and Binyamin represent this kind of restraint, right? Careful consideration to do what's right. He's not going to follow the trend of the secular world and fear, let's just do what everybody else is doing. No, I don't do that. That's where he's most powerful from. But what you don't have a concept by Yosef is the concept of tshuva. He's okay till he falls. But when he falls, he does not get out of the falling. That's what the meat of Yosef is. So you never really find Yosef who ever really sins per se in the Torah. Yehuda does. Yosef, you know, maybe he didn't develop a quality yet, but he never really, when he came to Eishes Potiphar, at the end of the day, he did not give in. He's the only one who could overcome that. Nobody could overcome that. Yehuda makes a mistake. David HaMelech sins twice. Real sins. Real sins for his level. But he's able to do unbelievable tshuva, more than anybody's able to do tshuva. So somebody can always be good at something. But to be good at everything, you know, is harder. They just, it's for those who go back, it's Willie Mays' 80th birthday. So you have to, if you go back, you can appreciate who Willie Mays was. If you're an American, you can appreciate, especially if you were from Cleveland and he wiped out your 1954 World Series aspirations, you can remember Willie Mays. So somebody did an article on Willie Mays, and it was a very good article. Sometimes you can find something good. They said, did Willie Mays, did he have the power, the most home run? He was a guy who could do everything. He could hit lots of home runs, steals lots of bases, was a good fielder, was a good hitter, was good in everything. And more than that, he always did it with a smile. They called him Say Hey Willie. You know, he was always with a smile. Mamish. If they win, they lose. It was mamish. At the end of his career, in my different lifetime, I saw a little bit of him, a shadow of him. He was really more in the 50s, but it got 60s and touch. But anyway, so they call him Say Hey. So the author wrote, he says, was he the greatest home run hitter? No, there were much bigger power hitters than him. Was he the greatest base stealer? There were better base stealers than him. Was he the greatest fielder? Oh, there was a great fielder. He was a great fielder. There could have been maybe a greater fielder. You know, but nobody in the same season could steal 20 bases, hit 20 triples, hit 20 doubles, hit 20 home runs, do them all. Nobody could do that. And all the little things he would do, like he's the only guy who would like get a walk, steal second, steal third, and then on a ground ball to the shortstop, he'd go make it at home and beat the throw. Like he'd kill teams just by doing everything right. Yeah, but he wasn't the best, but could do everything. So Lahavdol, if you want to get an idea what Malchus is, and they really treat he was like a Melech. Everybody loved him. You could not like the guy, but he would beat you every way. You know, they said one time he was on third base and whatever, the shortstop had the ball. And, you know, to go from third to home when the shortstop's got the ball, you can't do that. So it's, he looks at the shortstop looks at him, the play was over. Shortstop says, okay, I'm gonna give it back to the pitcher. By the time the shortstop gave the ball to the pitcher, Willie's still home. Like, they love the chutzpah to do that, you know, nobody would do that. He said, so what, was he the best in any one area? He wasn't the best. There was always somebody in one area, but in all the areas, he excelled in all of them. So, Lahavdil, that's what the Malchus of Yehuda. That's the Malchus of Yehuda. You know, yeah, Yosef was probably better at self-control. He was better at self-control. He never fell. He's a tzaddik. While Yehuda, but after I fall, I can still do tshuva. While Yosef, if he falls, when his descendants fall, you know, Achav and Yeravam, they go and split the kingdom. They can't do tshuva to bring the kingdom back together. That they don't know how to do tshuva. That they can't. So Binyamin, who's sort of Yosef's partner in that, but of a lesser degree, but he represents restraint. So when the Binyamin type falls, they don't have the power to get up again. So, because of that rigidity. So, if you're smart, and that's what Binyamin was smart, you hang around Yehuda. You hang around Yehuda, and Yehuda can, so to speak, compensate for that. Because Yehuda knows how to roll with the punches. Yehuda knows how to rise up again. And Yehuda's virtue is that he's never miayish. He never gives up. That's the difference. And you'll see this in David, in the stories. We go through David's life. He's mamish on the ropes so many times. His whole life is being on the ropes. Right? And he never gives up. On the other hand, Shaul, who's from the tribe of Miyamin, when he's on a high madrega, when Shaul is doing well, no plishti can touch him. And that's the beginning of his reign. No plishti can touch him. As he has great restraint. Remember, he's coming from Binyamin. Right? Shaul's coming from Binyamin. That's Yosef Binyamin. But when he falls, he's miayish. He gives up hope. When Shmuel says you'll no longer be the king, that's it. All of a sudden, depression falls over him. And the truth is, even if Hashem says you can't be the king, as we said at Shal Shudas, and we'll reiterate it when we come back to that story again, even when Hashem said you can't be the king, he still had a way out. He still had a way out, even though he didn't realize it. Had he not killed the city of Nov, Ir HaKohanim, then he could have remained as the king. It was still a way out. But he couldn't deal with it. Once he's a failure, he's miayish, he gives up. So who is the guarantor? Coming back to the guarantor. A guarantor for Binyamin, when he falls, who will help him rise again? Yehuda. Yehuda is the guarantor. Yehuda, for all time, guarantees Binyamin's place. So now you see a history plays itself out, that now David, who comes from Yehuda, is going to help out Shaul. It would be the greatest disgrace that Shaul can't even lead the troops into battle. It's such a disgrace. Because Shaul is already in a state of Yeush. He's already in despair. And therefore, he's down. So David picks up and says, I will guarantee you. And even though Shaul is decimated, but the entire tribe of Binyamin will still be sustained, and eventually will save every Jew. And when does that come out? When does that come out? It comes out in the story of Purim. When Mordechai still is able to save the Jews, and Mordechai comes from Shevet Binyamin. Right? Comes from Binyamin. He finishes the job off that Shaul couldn't do. But only why? Because David was there to sustain him and keep him going. So, Mordechai HaYehudi. Very good. He's called Mordechai HaYehudi. What do you mean HaYehudi? Is Mordechai, even though he's called Ish Yemini, he's from Benjamin, Binyamin, but he's called HaYehudi. Why? Because there was the Yehuda aspect rubbing off on him. And that's why those two tribes never went into exile. Because Yehuda can never go into exile. Can never go into exile because he always is with Hashem under all circumstances. So therefore he can never go into permanent exile. To be totally lost, he can never be lost. A Jew can be lost if he gives up on Hashem. If he can't hold on to Hashem under all circumstances, you're going to be lost. Yehuda goes into exile. Sure, they went into exile for 70 years. We've been into exile for 2,000 years. But we're never miyayish. If you never give up, you can roll with the punches, then you can stay. And Binyamin, who was clever enough to hang on with him, is able to stay as well. So this is that's the medrash, a beautiful medrash of what, even though Yishai didn't directly say, I'm sure he didn't say it directly to David, but that's what happened, and that's what was going on over there, and that's a tremendous connection that stays. So let's continue now. Pasuk Chaf. Vayashkem David Baboker. So now, David gets instructions, and the Malbim notes how meticulous David is to follow his father's instructions to the T. He gets up early in the morning, doesn't waste any time. And he's responsible. Vayitosh esetzon el shomer. And he leaves the sheep. He's the one watching the sheep, remember? Father told him to go, but he makes sure to have somebody watch the sheep. He gets one of the workers, say, listen, I'm going away. You make sure to watch the sheep. Vayisa vayelech, he goes up and goes kasher tzivo Yishai, exactly as Yishai commanded him. Vayavo hamagola, and he comes to the outer perimeter of the camp. Vahachayel hayotzel maracha, and then the soldiers who went out into battle formation. Vayreu b'mochama, and they got themselves ready for battle, although they couldn't do much. They were in battle formation, but they just stuck there in the battle formation because of Goliath. They're afraid. Pasuk of Aleph, Atarach Yisrael, Plishti, Maracha, Likras, Maracha. So you have one battle formation of the Jews opposite the battle formation of the Plishtim. Chapez, Vayitosh, David. So in other words, David came to see his brothers. His brothers are, so where do you go? So come, he's coming from the outside. You come from the outer perimeter of the camp. It's where the camp is camping out. Not near the battle formations. So David's there. He doesn't see his brothers. Why? Because his brothers are on the battlefront. So therefore, what does he do? Vayitosh David esakelim, me'olov. So David lets go of the utensils and the food, all the stuff he brought. He leaves it there. Ayad shomer kelim. But the guy there's a guy's job is to watch all that stuff. Now he runs to the battle lines. Vayavo, and he comes. Vayishal le'echav l'shalom. And he asks how his brothers are doing over there. So this is all explaining to you why the next thing happens, or else he would not have known. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vehu Medaber Imam. David is speaking to his brothers. Vnei Ish Habaynayim Ola. And now that man in between, the man in between, comes up again. Golias Haplishti, Golias the Philistine, Shmo his name. Migas, from Gas. Mima'archos plishtim. Now there's a Kri Uksiv. Mima'aros and Mima'archos. We read it, Ma'archos, from the battle line of the plishtim. Vayedaber kadvar ma'el. And he spoke those same words he spoke as we heard last week. And he spoke those blasphemous words against the Jewish people, against God, and to say, none of you could take me on. I want to kill you guys, etc., etc. And Vayishma David, and David hears this. It's the first time David hears it now. Pasuk of Dalet, V'chol ish Yisrael berosa mesayish. All the Jews, when they saw this man, Vayanusu mibonav, they ran away from him. Vayirim out, and they were very much afraid. And David's watching all this. Now, the Malbim points out, there's a few differences in this pasuk when Goliath goes out from the other times. In the other times, it says the man vayetze ish habeinayim. He went. He would be in between the two camps, but here it says vihine ish habeinayim ola. He's already climbing up the mountain. He's already. He's not just in between the valley. He's climbing up the mountain himself. He's ready now to take on the Jews. He's coming to them. And it's another time. It said he went out from the Plishti camp. Now it's coming from the Plishti battle formation. So it looks like he's ready. He's almost showing them, I'm going to lead them right into battle right now. So they get all scared and they run away from David. They run away from David. Now, it's what's the Kriyuk Steve doing over here? It says, Shmo, his name is, now already we're told about his name, weren't we? We're told way before. All about a complete description. Vayetze ish habeinayim, etc. Goliath shemo migas. So we're seems to be repeating a lot of things over here, but he's telling us he's coming mimaros or mimarachos plishim. So Rashi picks up on the kriyuk siv over there, and the rabbis learned the drasha from which I already told you beforehand. Ma'aros can also is also a word that's related to physical intimacy. So he's saying that 100 people had physical intimacy with Orpah, and from that came him. So the words are similar, ma'arachos, ma'aravos. So why is the Medrash telling this to us at this time about his terrible immorality? To let you know, as we'll see as we read on, that he was an extremely immoral guy. This is where he came from, immorality, and we're going to need somebody who's extremely great against immorality. They'll be able to take him on. Okay, tomorrow we will develop this much more as we see how David eventually gets himself in front of Goliath to fight him.